is finite, and there's some new time here, t, which is finite, and the entire Minkowski space is just that region. And so in this Penrose, in the second sort of aspect of the Penrose diagram is that by definition, when you construct a Penrose diagram, you make sure that the light rays go at plus or minus 45 degrees. And so in Minkowski space-time, for example, we have the null rays just do this. And so if I do a physics experiment, for example, you might send in some particle physics experiment, you might send in some particles from minus infinity. That would be a plane wave or a beam of particles coming in from minus infinity, and another beam coming the other way, and you might scatter them, and then some other beams would go off to plus and minus infinity. Okay, so in this picture, the S matrix is actually mapping the incoming states down here, in states to the out states. Okay, so that's the idea behind a Penrose diagram. And again, I'm not going to go through the algebra. This is just in the appendix of Sean Carroll's book, for example. Or his lecture notes, I think, have it as well. But having done Schwarzschild, it's nice to now do Schwarzschild in the same way, or Kruskal extension. So the Kruskal extension looks like this. There's an exterior region, which on this surface is these surfaces of Minkowski space. These are called I plus and I minus. And so in the Kruskal extension, you have an I plus and an I minus. This is sort of plus and minus infinity, incoming infinity and outgoing infinity outside the black hole. And then the singularity is a horizontal line in this diagram. And so we have the black hole region. This was region 1, 2, I think maybe 3 and 4. So there was the black hole, the white hole, and then you have another Minkowski-like asymptotic region. Okay, so that's a convenient little a diagram you can put in your pocket, and and that shows you that any possible thing which happens in a black hole spacetime can be drawn on that diagram. Okay, so particles coming in or out or whatever. So this trick of bringing infinity into a finite distance is actually very important. And for example, in work which many of us are doing now using holography, you may have heard the buzzwords, but holography is a way of describing quantum gravity using a theory which lives on the boundary of space-time. Okay, in that setup, one considers an infinite space, but brings the boundary into a finite volume through a conformal transformation. This, of course, has to diverge at infinity. Okay, so it's the same thing with the coordinate. You have to do something strange to make an infinite space into a finite space, and the answer is that this has to go to zero. If the new metric is omega squared times the old metric, then this quantity has to go to zero on the boundary to make the result finite. Anyhow, you can do that. And in this holographic picture, there is a conformal field theory, which is a theory invariant under such transformations, which lives on the boundary of space-time. And the idea of holography is that whatever happens inside the boundary, inside the bulk of the space-time, is equivalent to some dynamics on the boundary of space-time. And we describe the boundary of space-time using these Penrose mappings. Okay, now that's just to emphasize this is a nice and an important idea, and hopefully encourage some of you to do that exercise.
Mm-hmm. What are the
singularity. This is R equals 0. That's R equals RS. That's R equals RS. That's R equals 0. RS. RS. It's infinity. R equals infinity. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes, so.
And then setting it to
exactly.
Just like before.
Exactly. So you, if you work through that flat space exercise, you will see that essentially you set t equals to tan of something. And when you do the Kruskal extension, basically the same trick works. Yeah. And so you bring the stuff at infinity into a finite coordinate region. Okay, so now we're going to do probably the most important physical metric for black hole purposes. We'll do cosmology tomorrow. But that is the Kerr metric. Which was discovered in 1963. Okay, so this is the metric that describes a spinning black hole. So it's a black hole which is not static. It's actually got angular momentum. Okay, so this is a black hole with angular momentum. And so the terminology we use is that this is stationary, but not static. Okay. And physically, the difference between stationary and static is very intuitive. I mean, if I give you a top and I just hold it, then it's static. Hasn't got any angular momentum. It's not moving at all, nothing is moving. And if I time reverse it, it's the same. It's completely unchanged. So I take a movie of it and I time reverse the movie, it'll be the same. Okay, that's the definition of static. Stationary means that it's the same at all times, okay, but it actually has quantities which reverse under time reversal. So if it has angular momentum, if the top has angular momentum and I time reverse it, I will see the angular momentum reverse. Okay? So some quantities describing the top, like the density of the matter in the top, won't be time dependent, right? It's always in the same place, but it's actually spinning. The angular momentum of the top will have a particular direction, and because angular momentum is odd under time reversal, if you time reverse the top, the angular momentum will reverse. So that's this Kerr metric is stationary, that it's the same for all time, but it's not static in the sense that if I set t goes to minus t, it changes. It reverses. The angular momentum reverses. So I'm just going to write down the metric. This was discovered who knows how by Kerr. And it's a rather complicated formula. Okay. Sorry? Say again? Yeah, they do commute. It's just a way of writing it. It's just because if you want to read off GT phi, right? GT phi is this coefficient. So I can write the line element as GT phi dt d phi plus G phi t d phi dt. Right? If I write this down, G mu dx nu, then I've got two terms here. Okay, they commute, so I can equally well just write that as 4. There's nothing wrong with that. Okay? But if you want to be able to read off the off-diagonal element of the metric, it's easier to do it if you don't do that. Yep? Sorry, the? One, two, three. Oh, here. Sorry, dr squared. Thanks. Okay, so it's a very complicated expression. And the interpretation is that it's a black hole of mass m and angular momentum j equal to a times the mass. Okay. Yeah, you're right. Thanks. It's a square there. That should be sine squared. Okay, so this is obviously just a special choice of coordinates, and these coordinates are called Boyer-Lindquist. Coordinates. A is the parameter, and it measures the angular momentum of the black hole. So the angular momentum of the black hole is A times the mass m. Okay, it's obviously a parameter. Yeah, in fact, let me just be careful, because I'm putting in C, so let me be consistent about that. MAC. Angular momentum is the momentum times a distance. And so A is a kind of, is a quantity with dimensions of rate of length. And the angular momentum is MAC. Okay, so Kerr discovered the solution in other coordinates. There are many, of course, infinite number of possible coordinate systems, but this one is easier for some purposes. So let's look at the properties of this metric. So this solves the vacuum Einstein equation. Okay, this solves r mu nu equals 0. So, yeah. No. Why do you say that?
Well, because you said when the star collapses, everything.
Yeah, the star ends up there, but the black hole, you should, it's a kind of self-sustaining solution of GR.
Okay.
It has mass, but, you know, where is the mass? I don't know. It's spread over space. at least in everything I've told you, the only definition of the mass is it's a parameter in the metric, such that at large distances, the gravitational potential goes like gm over r. That's the definition of the gravitational mass. It's just the parameter which comes into the weak field approximation to the metric at large radii. That's it. So, of course, when people discover these solutions, many people thought, well, maybe that's what an elementary particle is. Maybe it's just a curved up piece of space-time, and that's it just gets some mass because it's curved up. And that's still, in fact, a popular idea. That you know, maybe there is no mass in the world. All elementary particles are just little black holes that are twists in space-time. Any other questions? Okay, so let's stare at this metric a little bit. It's a bit forbidding. But the easy thing to do is to take some limits. Okay, so first of all, let's keep m fixed and take a to 0. So we're going to and just stare at this metric. So if m is fixed and a is 0, then rho is r. Okay, from here. And this becomes exactly the Schwarzschild metric. Okay? So obviously this term goes to 0 because a is 0. This stuff all goes away and becomes r squared sine squared theta d phi squared, because here I have r to the fourth in the numerator and then r squared in the denominator. And this is the usual form of the metric. And delta becomes, or at least delta over r squared, this coefficient becomes 1 minus 2gm over r c squared. So that's an easy limit. It goes to Schwarzschild. Okay, in Schwarzschild coordinates. We can take the opposite limit, a fixed, and m goes to 0. And so this is a black hole whose mass and angular momentum are going to 0, right? Because angular momentum is m times a. So if I keep a fixed and said m goes to 0, so what physically should I get? Yeah, go ahead. Oh, yeah, that's because I wrote rho down wrongly. Sorry. Sorry, thank you.
If it's substituting for rho a to 0 in the first one, oh, sorry, rho squared equals 0.
Sorry?
Sorry, I misread.
Okay. Any other questions? Yeah, so this dependence on theta here really makes this a very complicated function. That's why it was so hard to discover. Okay, so let's take this other limit. A is fixed, m goes to 0. So this is going to be a black hole with no mass and no angular momentum. Okay, so what do you think we should get? Yeah, good guess. We get Minkowski space. So let's just take that limit. And we will get minus dt squared, because this term goes to 0, right? A is finite, but m is going to 0. So that first term goes to 0. The second term goes to, this term goes to 0, because m is going to 0. The third term goes to r squared plus a squared cos squared theta. That's the rho squared over r squared plus a squared dr squared plus r squared plus a squared cos squared. I'm just writing out everything. I could call this rho squared, but I'm just writing it out. Theta squared plus r squared plus a squared sine squared theta d phi squared. Okay, so that doesn't quite look like Minkowski space. Okay, but actually it is Minkowski space. this is Minkowski. The time part of it looks good, but the space part doesn't. This is Minkowski in coordinates x equal to r squared plus a squared to the 1/2 sine theta sine phi, cos phi, y equals r squared plus a squared to the 1/2 sine theta sine phi, and z equal to r squared plus a squared cos theta. Okay, have you ever seen these coordinates before? Anybody? A little bit obscure, but these are called, instead of spherical polar coordinates, they're called ellipsoidal. Polar coordinates. Okay, and they're useful when you solve problems which involve some kind of ring or a toroidal structure. So obviously, if you spin a black hole, it's quite plausible. It in a sense, turns into a ring. And so these are a very natural set of coordinates. So let me sketch the coordinates. So ellipsoidal coordinates, obviously they're coordinates in three dimensions, but I can just graph z versus x, for example, and show lines of, so I'm graphing the plane phi equals 0. And I'll graph lines of constant r and constant theta. So the r equals, the first point to note is that there's special values of x at plus a and minus a. And r equals constant surfaces or ellipses. Okay, r equals const. And and then lines of constant theta look like this. Or maybe I'll do those in a different color. No, I don't think it's as simple as that. Sorry, the r equals constant surfaces are ellipses. And you can see that because x squared plus, yeah, if I take phi equals 0, so I'm in the xz plane, right, then x squared plus z squared, these cosines and sines will add to 1. And so the surface of constant r has x squared plus z squared equal to r squared plus a squared. And this is a fixed number. Okay, so in fact, it's a... sorry? Oh, there's a half. Yeah, so... So what's wrong with that? Nothing wrong with that. Okay. So okay, let me just see.
Is there a square root in the form of
the quadratic? Yes, there is. Oh, that's what's bothering you, sorry. Wouldn't be dimensionally right otherwise. Sorry. Very important. I wrote this down wrong. this is R cos theta. Okay, sorry about that. Z is just R cos theta. And so So what you can see from this is that x squared over r squared plus a squared plus z squared equals 1. Right? That's the, if I take x squared in the phi equals 0 plane, x squared over r squared plus a squared is just sine squared theta, and z squared over r squared equals 1. So that's just an ellipse, okay, because r and a are just held constant on that surface. Okay, these other curves, you can figure out what they are. But basically they look like this. They're not, I don't think they're hyperbole or anything like that. Sorry? No. No. This is equal to sine squared theta. Are you worried about phi? This whole plane is phi equals 0. I'm working in the y equals 0 plane, right? We're in three dimensions. I'm working in the y equals 0 plane, which is phi equals 0. So cos phi is 1. Yep. Should be able to tell that from the metric. The answer is that they are, okay, because the fact there's no off-diagonal elements in the metric anywhere says they're orthogonal. Okay, then they're hyperbolites. All right, fine. I'm not bothered if they're hyperbolites or not. So let me just finish drawing the diagram. Okay. So this curve is the limit where theta goes to pi over 2. This is theta goes to pi over 2. And theta goes to minus pi over 2. And this one is theta equals 0. Well, in fact, I shouldn't really label this theta minus pi over 2. That's just theta equals pi over 2. You see, the whole picture is just rotated around the z-axis. I just take this picture, and the phi coordinate is just rotated around the z-axis. Okay, so it's cylindrically symmetric system of coordinates. And this r equals 0 is actually this disk. Okay, so this disk here is R equals 0.
So is that disk the generator?
Yes. Coordinates are singular on that disk. Okay. Okay, so those are ellipsoidal coordinates, and what we've discovered is that the Kerr metric is in the limit as m goes to 0 is just flat space in ellipsoidal coordinates. I shouldn't have written it, erased it. Now I've got to write it up again, I'm afraid. Minus, bound to get it wrong. That one?
Yeah.
Really? Okay. Good thing I wrote it out again. It should be there. Okay. And then we have this rho squared equals r squared plus a squared cos squared theta. Okay, so there it is again. Now, obviously, we are interested to know if this metric has any event horizons. Okay, are there places where the coordinate system here is singular? And when we go to some better coordinate system, we'll just discover that it's a surface from which light cannot escape. Okay, so it's an event horizon is a surface which is the boundary of a region of space-time from which light cannot escape. So what's the criteria for that to happen? And now we have to think a little bit more carefully about an event horizon. So event horizon an event horizon is a the boundary of a region from which light cannot escape to infinity. And obviously, it's got to be a null surface, because if you're on the event horizon, you can just make it to infinity, okay, if you're a light ray. So it's a null surface which extends to infinity. And we can see that that's indeed the case here, that the R equals constant surface in the Kerr metric. So just like Schwarzschild, we have some particular radius from inside of which I can't escape to infinity. So let's consider the constant radius surface. So that's some surface in space-time. And say I draw this in some time and space coordinate, T and R, for example. In general, I'll pick some other time coordinate. Let's call it T prime. So there's some null surface, okay, in an appropriate coordinate system. There's a null surface. Remember, we have theta and phi as well. So every point on this diagram is always a two-sphere, right? It's really a spherical shell of light which is running off to infinity. So the R equals constant surface in T and R, of course, looks like this. In T and R, just looks like that. But we want to check if it's null. So is there a R equals constant surface which is null? And to check that, you notice that d mu r is equal to the normal vector to r equals constant. Okay, that follows because you see r is just a function on space-time. The coordinate r is a function on space-time. And if I have any function on space-time, let's say phi of x, and these are the contours of constant phi, then the gradient of phi is normal to the contours of constant phi. Okay? So that should be clear, because if I move within the surface, then the change in phi is just dx mu d mu phi, and this is 0 if dx mu is in the surface. So obviously, d mu phi must be normal to the surface. The gradient is always normal to the contours of constant phi. And obviously, it goes in the direction of increasing phi. This gradient points uphill, just like on a contour map. So d mu r is a vector, a space-time vector, which points to increasing r, and it's normal to the r equals constant hypersurfaces. Now, if some surface goes null, or is null, then its normal vector is null too, is also null. Okay, and that's clear, because if you think about a local region of Minkowski space, then if I draw a null surface in Minkowski space, then the normal vector to that surface is null. Okay, so imagine I've got some function whose level sets or whose surfaces of constant phi are null, then the normal should also be null. And so this gives you an easy way to check at which radius the surface r equals constant is null, and that's when g mu nu d mu r g nu r equals 0. Okay, so I'm just measuring the length squared of the normal vector. And so this is a coordinate invariant quantity, but I can work it out in the coordinate system I've given, because obviously in this coordinate system, d mu r is just 0, 1, 0, 0, because t, theta, and phi don't depend on r, and the r coordinate is just r. And so this is just grr. So the statement is that when g with both indices upstairs is 0, then the surface r equals constant is a null surface. So in Schwarzschild, this is correct. Schwarzschild, remember, child g downstairs rr is 1 minus 2 gm over rc squared, inverse. And so g upstairs rr is just the inverse of that. So g rr upstairs is just the rr element of the matrix inverse. And so this is 1 minus 2 gm over rc squared. So that's 0 on the Schwarzschild radius. Okay, so this criterion is a general one, and we can use it here. I'll leave the metric up there. And so here, GRR is equal to the inverse of this, okay? Because this is a matrix with TT, T5, phi phi, so it has a complicated 2x2 matrix in the T and phi directions, right? T, R, theta, phi. So I guess it has elements there, 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 and then R, R, theta, theta. So there's a complicated matrix linking T and phi, but the R, R, and theta, theta directions are diagonal. And so if you invert the matrix, you'll do things to these four components, and then you'll just invert this guy and inverse that guy. So GRR inverse is delta over rho squared. And if I set that equal to 0, then I have delta equals 0, which is r squared plus a squared minus r squared minus 2gm over rc squared plus a squared. And so this gives me just a quadratic equation, r equals gm over c squared plus or minus square root gm over c squared squared minus a squared. And so that's defined to be r plus and r minus. Okay, so the difference from Schwarzschild is that we don't just have one event horizon, we have two. There's an inner event horizon and an outer event horizon. Oh, wow. When you run out of time. So in this diagram of the ellipsoidal polar coordinates, we have an r minus, and we also have an r plus. Okay, so Kerr black hole has two event horizons. And it has something in addition. Yeah, okay, so let's start with discussing that. It has two horizons. If we work out the Riemann curvature, okay, so you could do this using your computer code, for example. This would go like 1 over rho to the sixth, again, near... as rho vanishes. So there is actually a singularity at rho equals 0. Okay, but if you look at the definition of rho, rho squared is equal to r squared plus a squared cos squared theta. Okay? So the only way for rho to be 0 if r equals 0 and theta equals pi over 2. Okay, so the singularity is not everywhere on this disk, okay, because the disk had different values of theta running along this line. It's only these points where it's singular. Okay, at r equals 0 and theta equals pi over 2. So these two points are at x equals plus or minus a. And so the singularity is actually not there on the disk at all. The singularity is at the ends of this line. And if I now think about rotating this around in the phi coordinate, the singularity is a ring. Okay, so by rotating the black hole, what you've done is take the Schwarzschild singularity, which was a point, r equals 0, and you actually stretched it out into a ring. Okay? And now there will be all kinds of very fascinating physics when you play around with that ring. Okay? Yeah. Was stretched out. Yeah, I mean, I think the way. Let's see if I have a. I think you could you can measure distances. Along that singularity. Now, the trouble is the metric is going to, let me just think. metric's going singular there, so I think you have to. I think you have to ask whether the geodesics, as they head towards that point, are converging. In other words, will the distance between two neighboring geodesics become arbitrarily small? And I believe for short shell the answer is yes. And you can see that in the RT. See, the RT coordinates are fine inside the event horizon. You must just bear in mind that T is radius. Okay? And so, it's a good question. I think the answer is that all geodesics will come arbitrarily close to each other. But that can be checked. Yeah. Okay, this will be very, very bizarre. Okay, I'm not going to tell you immediately because the answer will surprise you. Okay. But this ring will lead to basically time travel. Okay, so pretty interesting things are going to happen inside this curved black hole. Unfortunately, I think I've run out of time. So I think we'll have to continue tomorrow. I'll just sort of preview it. By saying that it turns out that outside the first event horizon, there's another region called the ergosphere. Okay. Now, this outer surface will be the infinite redshift surface, right? So remember when you fell into a Schwarzschild black hole, as you approach the R equals RS, the light that a person is emitting is redshifted. For somebody at infinity, it's redshifted. So we would see someone falling into the black hole, becoming redder and redder and redder, and then disappearing. Okay? The same thing happens with Kerr, but that infinite redshift surface is outside the event horizon. Okay? So you can watch somebody fall into that surface. They will disappear for a while. But they can come out of it again. Okay? There's no problem with that. You can fly your rocket ship into the ergosphere. You're completely hidden from the outside world. They will see you sort of fade away where you entered. And then they will see you fade into view at some other place on the black hole, okay, where you come out. Now, the other thing we'll discuss tomorrow is that you can use this process to extract energy from the black hole. Okay, so it turns out if you fly into the black hole and then you release a particle in here, which you throw into the black hole, right? So you fly into the black hole, just throw a brick into the black hole and come out of the black hole. Then it turns out that you exit the black hole with more energy than you went in. Okay? And so you can use this to extract energy from a black hole. It's called the Penrose process. You don't really create, and you're not creating energy out of nothing. It turns out what you're really doing in doing this is slowing down the black hole. You're consuming some of its angular momentum as you do that. So you throw something, when you go through the details of the calculation, you'd find that the only way you can extract energy is by reducing the angular momentum of the black hole. But there's a vast amount of energy stored in this black hole, right? The black hole in the center of our galaxy is, I think, 10 to the 7 solar masses. Okay? The energy is mc squared. It's a very big number. Okay? And you know, so the black hole in the center of our galaxy can be the power station for the whole galaxy, for all the civilizations in the whole galaxy. Okay, you just have to figure out how to fly in and out of this ergosphere, and then transport the energy out throughout the galaxy. So that'll be one of the cool processes involved here. And then we will construct the Penrose diagram for this space-time. And you will see that inside this black hole is an infinite sequence of repeating space-times, which go on forever. Okay. Yeah?
Are all black holes curved black holes?
Yeah.
Are they
just because things have angular momentum. There's no reason for something not to have angular momentum. So when you form a black hole, if the cloud had some rotation that collapsed, you get Kerr. So Schwarzschild is definitely a special case which you wouldn't see. Everything will be Kerr. How is? The Kerr metric. You just take that formula and put it in the Einstein equation. This was a guess. This was a guess. There is no known derivation of this metric. It was a very clever guess. And remember, he didn't have any computer algebra. He was a farmer.
He was a farmer, yeah. Right. He wasn't a physicist. He'd been training physics, but yeah, he wasn't a physicist. He was just sitting at night on his farm and he wrote the solution down.
Maybe a sheep told him. Oh, I see. Can you kind of go through the middle of it? I think the limit, I'm not sure. I mean, you can check it yourself. But the ergosphere touches the outer horizon. There is what is called an extremal limit. Okay, and I think that's what you're talking about. When basically, so you have J equals to AM. And I believe the extremal limit is when A is 1. Maybe A is M. There is an extremal limit, okay? There's an extremal limit in which the angular momentum is kind of as big as it can be for given mass. Let me see what that is. I think, is that A equals 1 over M, maybe? I'm not sure. But in that extremal limit, what happens is all this degenerates. Okay, so everything will degenerate. The thing is spinning so fast that it becomes completely flat. And it wouldn't produce Kerr. There, you can do that, it turns out, but only in 5 dimensions. Okay, so the Kerr black hole is the unique stationary solution of the Einstein equations with angular momentum. It's absolutely unique. There's no other sort of steady state solution. If you go to 5 dimensions, you can indeed put a ring of black holes in a ring and spin the ring. So the uniqueness theorem for Kerr fails in 5 dimensions. It's only unique in 4 dimensions. In 5 dimensions, there's something called a black ring. And the black ring is basically a black hole, set of black holes in a ring, and you can spin it, and it's also a stationary solution. In fact, recent work at PI by Luis Lehner showed that, let me see if I get this right, the black ring is basically made out of a black string. A black string is just a series of black holes in a line, okay, and it only occurs in 4+1 dimensions, not 3+1. And so what Luis showed is that this black ring has an instability, which is actually known as the Gregory-Laflamme instability. And Raymond Laflamme is the IQC director. He discovered it when he was a student, that this black string in 5 dimensions is actually unstable. But it was took about 20 years for people to calculate exactly what happens as it goes unstable. And what happens is you form a naked singularity that you can see. So in 5 dimensions, GR is kind of sicker than in 4 dimensions. You have solutions which, when they collapse, they make visible singularities. You can see the place where GR is failing. That means the theory loses all predictive power. Can't predict anything from it. So this is a very new thing. This is in the last 6 months that there's a real difference between 5D and 4D gravity. So, but the black ring is actually stable as far as, I don't think anyone's proven it, but as far as people know, the black ring is a stable solution. Just that when you open it up to a string, it goes unstable in 5D. 4D, you can't do anything interesting like that, as far as I know. But yeah, the fact that this thing exists next door to us, this curved black hole is definitely there at the center of our galaxy, is pretty exciting. It should be. So I think I told some of the youths yesterday, there's a really nice movie on the web that if you just look up Milky Way black hole, okay, you'll find movies of the stars in the center of our galaxy. And what you'll see is over the last 10 or 15 years, there was this star that just came very near to the black hole in the center, and all of a sudden it gets this big kick from passing near to the black hole. It's very, very sort of dramatic. And the next kind of exciting prospect, I think, in this is something called VLBA, very long baseline, VLBI, very long baseline interferometry. So basically, it's a network of telescopes all over the Earth, and they are all looking at the center of the galaxy, radio telescopes, using interferometry to get very precise angular resolution, very good angular resolution. They are close to being able to resolve the Schwarzschild radius of the black hole. And so this black hole is surrounded by gas and other stuff, and the hope is that you will actually see this dark patch on the gas that will tell you that that is the black hole. So it's possible to resolve it. And they keep claiming this is around the corner. It was around the corner about 2 or 3 years ago, and I think it's still just around the corner. But we should be able to actually see this black hole directly, the Schwarzschild radius of it. It would be pretty exciting. And future generations will no doubt have their vacations there. Yeah. That's a really good question. I have no idea. Ergo means work in Latin, in Greek. Ergo means work. And I think the name comes about because you
I think they often use sphere to kind of like region, like the atmosphere. It's not really a sphere.
I guess that's it. I guess that's it. Atmosphere.
It's supposedly sphere. Light of constant R.
Yep.
Well,
you know, they're ellipsoids in the coordinates I defined, okay? If something is actually an ellipsoid, you know, that depends on something else. You need to know the metrics. So don't take it too seriously, but it just looks like an ellipsoid in the x, y, z coordinates.
So can you say that the singularity is a ring if that horizontal axis represents r equals 0?
Well, like with everything else you have to do, you must go to a coordinate system in which this part of the space-time is not singular. Now, the ellipsoidal coordinates break down there, okay? So you must change to another coordinate system. But basically, this calculation gives it to you as a function of rho. And this is coordinate invariant, okay? So, I mean, the numerical value of the Ricci scalar is independent of coordinates. So given that I calculated it in a coordinate system which was valid all the way here, right, but then broke down on the disk, and the number's not changing, right? It's a squared. Say I go in the interior of the disk. Say here's my disk, and I calculated Riemann squared. Let me see. So theta is not pi over 2. Let's say theta is 0 at the center of the disk. Here's theta equals 0. So I calculate my Riemann curvature. R is going to 0, but I have this a squared term here. It's a constant. So Riemann squared is just going to a constant. Yeah, the coordinate system's breaking down, but the number I get is not going to change when I do the coordinate transformation. So it's pretty clear that when I change to a non-singular coordinate system, I'm going to get the same number. Okay, so it's a little bit of a cheat, but it's I think it's obviously going to work. Okay, yeah.
Why don't we just write the curve metric in such a way that when you take a to 2, it just gets spherical coordinates or something?
You can do that. Maybe. You're welcome to try. You're welcome to try. There are no globally good coordinates for curve. That's the whole point. It's the whole reason we developed the notion of tensors and coordinate transformations and everything, because we don't believe coordinates are significant. So for Kerr, you really have to use different coordinates in different regions. No, they use everything. It's maybe 100 coordinate systems people use for Kerr. You're welcome to invent another one. Yeah. Okay. So see you tomorrow.
So okay, the tutorial will start at 1:40.